Joining me now in the studio with an open space update from Summit Lands Conservancy, the director, Cheryl Fox. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning.
So let's see. We're getting down to the wire with the purchase of Bonanza Flat.
That's right.
What's your total?
We have raised at the Summit Land Conservancy a little over $140,000. Collectively, the nonprofit coalition has raised about $1.5 million. So there's been just tremendous community support from individuals and local businesses wanting to see this beautiful piece of property preserved. So we're still working hard. In fact, yesterday I got a $50,000 challenge grant. So we're still working very hard to see if we can match that and bring that total up. The city will have to make a decision, pretty quickly as to whether or not they're going to go forward. It is, I believe, on the council's agenda for this Thursday, because the decision, the deadline is the 15th, which is next Wednesday. So a lot of support has come forward. Summit County has come forward. So hopefully we will be moving forward.
Yeah. Now, are your contributions that you're collecting, are those contingent on whether or not this goes forward? Because I know some of them are. It's like, well, if we don't buy it, you'll get your money back.
Absolutely. Everybody's money will be refunded if we aren't able to go forward with this. Yes. So we are keeping very good records.
Right.
And, it would be unfortunate if we had to. But yes, if it, for some reason it falls through and it doesn't happen, people can get their money back.
Yeah. And we're hearing a lot of optimism from, city and county officials. Had heard last week from Salt Lake City and their utilities that mm-hmm. they're also very interested in contributing to this. Midway City even mm-hmm. maybe thinking about it. Is there somebody, yes. though, out there that is going to make it up if, in fact, we do fall a little bit short? I mean, do we have that big donor?
Well, I keep trying to find that person. If that person is listening or if you know who that person is, we sit down or we take them skiing. And if you stand at the top of the McConkie's chair and you look back, or you stand at the top of the Empire chair, at the top of Orion, and you look back. In fact, the people that I was speaking with yesterday, we were talking about that. And think about what our skiing experience would be at any of the resorts if, instead of getting to the top of the mountain and seeing the beautiful Wasatch back and the peaks, I always think they look like waves. These big, beautiful peaks going up to the sky, how different would that be if that flat was filled with condos and roads and, smoking cars and all the rest of it? It would really, I think, impair our experience of what it means to be skiing here or be living here in Park City. So I am hoping that we will find the people, the individuals, the businesses, and the governments to come forward and actually make this happen.
So we've got one more fundraising opportunity. Tell me about that. What's happening at Whole Foods on Friday?
Right. So there's ongoing fundraising. Like I said, we have this challenge grant, so people can go to our website and make contributions. On Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. at Whole Foods, Whole Foods is hosting a family-friendly art show and silent auction. There are 10 artists. The Park City Artists Association came forward and said, we want to help. And many other artists have helped, too. Bridget Meinhold had an art show. Howie Garber had an art show. So this is another art show. No RSVP necessary. All proceeds will benefit Bonanza Flats. If you can't make it to Whole Foods, you can still go on our website, wesaveland.org/auction, and you can see photos of all of the pieces. Some of them are photographs. Some of them are, very detailed. Some of them are very whimsical. It's really an interesting collection, and we're really honored that local artists have wanted to make a contribution. But, lots of locals, businesses, artists have wanted to come forward and help. And it's a little tricky because the time frame is short, and we don't really have time to organize a big event with a big silent auction and all of that. So, but not to minimize the fact that the community has been incredibly supportive of saving this piece of open space.
Okay. Anything else you want to mention?
Yes. We also have one of our moonshine adventures on Saturday night this week. So that's Saturday, March 11th. These are little, we go out and play in the dark with our friends at Mountain Trails. So if people want to come, this is a backcountry ski kind of experience or a touring experience. So you have to bring your touring gear and a headlamp. And meet at the bottom of First Time at 7 p.m. at night. and they hike up to home run to the Angle Station, and then ski back down. So it's a fun, play in the moonlight nighttime adventure.
Okay, Cheryl, thanks for coming in.
Thank you,
Cheryl Fox with the Summit Land Conservancy. KPCW News Time now, 8:18. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the KPCW Local News Hour. The Summit County Council meets tomorrow. They'll be meeting at the Sheldon Richens Building at Kimball Junction. On the phone with a preview of the agenda, I have County Manager Tom Fisher. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, so before we get to the agenda, we had just heard from Cheryl Fox from Summit Land Conservancy saying we're at about $32 million, even though that seems like the numbers change every minute for the purchase of Bonanza Flat. Is that about what you're hearing?
We're hearing, we hear from Summit Lands, we hear from Utah Open Lands, but our main contact is our friends at Park City, we're hearing about the same amount of money. Lots of things still working, obviously, as Park City lines up all the funding as needed. Very optimistic that things are going to move forward.
So there are only two county council meetings before that March 15th deadline for the Park City Council to close on the purchase of Bonanza Flat, or at least add another $1.5 million option, non-refundable, by the way. So when will the county council hold a public meeting about the county's grants and land exchanges, which they hope to fund to this effort to the tune of $5.75 million?
So related to that $5.75 million, the city and the county are reviewing paperwork that would put those items in place, the draft paperwork for that. As soon as we have a joint agreement on that, and we're going to be meeting again this week as staff in order to work on that. As soon as it's ready to get on the agenda, we will do that. As you look at our agenda, we have a closed session this week with the council. We've just reserved that time in case we need it to talk to them about that issue. I don't have anything specific to talk to them at this point, but we're working hard to get it done.
Yeah, does it involve the Triangle parcel at all?
Those discussions are still in close, so I can't really talk about what specifically are involved with them. As soon as as the councils are ready to get that on the agenda, then I can.
Okay, so you're not confirming or denying that then, huh?
I am not confirming or denying.
You have hired a new staff member from Denver, Colorado. Jana, I think her name is. She's going to do
Jana,
what exactly?
I'm hoping to have her in to talk to you next week. Her official title is Public Policy and Intergovernmental Relations Director. She has a very interesting background, both at the federal level as congressional staff and Labor Department staff, as well as spent the past 5 years as the executive director of the Denver City Council. And so, as we've looked, especially at this last legislative process, where there was a lot of bills that affected county government, affected local control. One of the areas that I really wanted to tighten up with the county and provide some support for the council is legislative affairs. So right away, as the legislative session ends, she's going to be digging in with both folks from Park City, Matt Dias, our council, and with our relationship with UAC, to bring some formalization to the process of how we support and work with the legislator on things that are important to Summit County.
So was this a position that was budgeted for?
It was. To the extent that we have contingency and some salary savings right now in order to account for that. As we work into the next budget process, we will be bringing some more formalization to that.
All right. Taking a look at the agenda, the bylaws for the Restaurant Tax Advisory Committee, is there a change here or is this just an update?
It is not. There is no real change. It's just a requirement that they be reauthorized every few years. So our attorney's office brought it forward.
All right. The Ranger Robotics team, the county had a campaign to hand out dog leashes and encourage their use. That ran between 2003 and 2011. Why do we have a group called the Ranger Robotics team studying a new leash campaign?
Well, it's an independent group, I believe through one of the schools that's been working on their own in their robotics program. But they have a personal interest in working on this issue within the community. So they approached our Animal Services Department and Director Clay Coleman about putting together a program. They presented that to our internal communications committee a few weeks ago, and our communications committee was so impressed that they wanted to get them in front of the council to do the same presentation. Just a public relations campaign related to our leash laws to encourage people to follow those. They are going to be asking for a few dollars in order to implement that, but a very exciting program that was brought forth by a youth group. So, you know, it's something that's fun to encourage.
All right. Let's see. The resolution for up to $12 million being brought back to the council, this again to refinance an existing bond and to help pay for covering up the cell at the landfill and then to finish the CAMA services building. I'm just curious why this wasn't approved now. I mean, you needed to come back and do what to it?
So it has a process to it. So last week we had on the agenda describing the schedule to the council, and we did that. They asked us to bring forth the initial resolution that starts the process. You know, so starting Wednesday, if they approve the resolution, then we'll go through several different items of due diligence and meetings with bond counsel. To get final documents where we'll end up with the process of closing those bonds around mid-May.
So is there any opportunity to bond with this money to help pay for Bonanza Flat even further?
I suppose that there would be, but I'm not specifically sure whether this bond is allowed to be used for that purpose. It has not been discussed at all to bond for that. For that money. So I think the council's intent in the budget was to deal with a refinance to take advantage of the favorable interest rates, as well as deal with the campus building and the landfill only.
All right. Council will also be looking at a temporary zoning ordinance known as a TZO for grading pyramids. This after the controversy over the motocross track. What do you hope to accomplish over the next 6 months?
Well, that's one of the projects that came forward within the last year that had an issue with grading permits. We had a few others. You know, what we're trying to accomplish is provide a mechanism within our both of our land use codes in order to force a communication between our grading permits, which fall in the engineering department, and our land use code, and especially land use permitting. So that we don't miss things. You know, that part of what seems to happen is that sometimes applicants either, you know, innocently don't know the process and target one area over another and don't talk to the other area, and then there's a controversy that usually ends up in front of the council in an appeal. We're trying to tighten up that so that we can make it more clear to the public what is required when you're building on a piece of property.
Yeah, why do this, though, with a TZO? I mean, I can understand if you had some, you know, other motocross tracks in the wings here, but basically...
Well, a TZO is a pretty standard process in order to tighten up a process before you actually put something permanently in place in the code. It also allows us to, you know, bring in some folks into that process in front of the planning commissions or with the planning commissions to study that for a period of time so that we can get it as right as we can before we put it in the code.
All right. My understanding is that this, under this TZO, a grading permit outside of a development would need a low-impact permit if it moves more than 40 cubic yards or changes in elevation more than 2 feet. So are these based on something, or are they just kind of arbitrary numbers?
They're not arbitrary numbers. As I was reading through the staff report, I think the main thing was that we don't want to affect just basic gardening and landscaping type stuff that's done every year on property. But But when it comes, you know, it's kind of a threshold that allows you to know that there's something going on that's more than that, that's more construction related. So it forces that communication during this temporary period, and we'll see where those numbers end up in the final looks from the planning commissions.
Yeah. So have you heard from the motocross property owner Steve Luzak or his counsel about an appeal of the judge's decision on this track?
I saw something come across on email yesterday. I didn't read it specifically, and I'm waiting to hear from the attorney's office on what they're what they are attempting to do in their next step. Their appeal was of my letter, could be of my letter to stop the activity on that property, and that would go in front of an administrative law judge. But I haven't read it specifically, what came in from their attorneys.
All right. Anything else you want to mention?
I do have a couple of things. First of all, we most likely will be advertising for two vacancies.
Well, the Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow night with Treasure Hill back on the agenda in the studio with an update. Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning, Bruce.
Good morning, Leslie.
So Treasure returns to the Planning Commission. We missed last month so that the applicant could finish some traffic counts. Are those now finished?
Well, the applicant did some traffic counts over President's Day, and they're putting the information together. So tomorrow night we're going to start the discussion with the conversation about parking at the project, which affects the traffic. And they'll be coming back in April 12th, and they'll be giving us their final report on traffic. After April 12th, then we'll do the analysis along with the transportation planning team and come up with some conclusions for the Planning Commission. So tomorrow night, we're focused on the project parking. And once again, it's a bit of a game of numbers. There's a calculated number of parking spaces based on the 85-86 approval. There's another calculation based on the 2009 application. There's some questions the Planning Commission is going to ask about how support commercial is parked or not parked, which is what the 2009 Planning Commission asked about. And then there's the question about how you manage support commercial. In that we have a number of large hotel projects in town that got approval for what we call support commercial, which doesn't ordinarily have a parking requirement. And then it transitions over into something that's open to the public, and we don't necessarily have enough parking for all of that. So Planning Commission is going to be asking that question as well, is how do we manage that situation?
So give me an example, of support commercial at a hotel.
A restaurant, a spa, mm-hmm. Let's say a ski rental shop. So if you were Slopeside, like Stein's or like Golden Hirsch or Montage, and you wanted to have 3,000 square feet of ski rental, that's not really going to attract the public. That's for the purposes of the people who are staying in the unit. That's support commercial. The restaurants typically are kind of a blended combination of support for the people staying there. Folks go to Stein's for dinner. And we kind of blend the parking up there. So, for example, in Silver Lake, because we have a lot of destination guests and really pretty good public transportation and shuttles from the airport, the parking demand is not as high as, say, some of the hotels down here on Park Ave. So we have extra spaces that can be used for public parking for night restaurant operations or day restaurant operations, where some of the hotels down here probably don't. They're probably more drive-up situations, so we don't have that overlap of parking.
Yeah, but I think Treasure is going to be similar to St. Regis. Am I right? We're going to have some kind of cabriolet that or funicular or something
right.
like that take them up, and so that works with JG Grill. But that's because we have the parking at Snow Park.
Exactly right. And so the planning department is not advocating for underparking this project, because I think the adverse impacts of not putting enough parking into this project probably make it spill out more into the neighborhoods. If we overpark, then the building gets too big. So it's a bit of a balancing game. And, while there's not a direct correlation between parking and traffic, there's a indirect correlation. Because the more cars you have parked there, the more cars you're going to have going up. So we're playing the calculus model right now and trying to come up with the right answer, and the Planning Commission will be starting that discussion tomorrow night.
So do you have a number? What are we talking in terms of on-site parking.
It's somewhere between 350 and 400 plus, depending on the calculation and how the parking management plan works.
All right. And we're also, in terms of just the internal vehicular and pedestrian circulation systems, do those work for staff?
For the most part, they do work. You know, I think they're kind of a lesser issue for us right now. We don't know the implications of the Cabriolet yet. We don't understand the implications of the employee arrivals at the bottom of the Cabriolet, because there's not very much employee parking at the hotel. So all those implications are, excuse me, going to come up in the future. It says if we're delivering employees from an off-site location and they get onto the Cabriolet, where does that function take place? What's the capacity? All of those things.
All right. Let me see. Yard subdivision back on the agenda. The city's the applicant here, right?
Yes, that's correct.
All right. And what is it that you, the city, wants to do?
The city needs, and the city and the property owner need to create a lot of record before the sale can close. So we're creating two lots of record and additional road right-of-way for a potential future road that goes, that connects Munchkin to Homestake. So almost right through the recycle center. It's part of the transportation master plan. It's part of the general plan through there. I think what we're going to do in this particular case is work for a wider right-of-way but a smaller road, so that if we do what we call complete streets, which is a bike lane and transit and big sidewalks and nice landscaping, we've got room to do that, so we're not constrained by future development. So the right-of-way is a little bit bigger than the road section that we would propose, and we're working on what that road looks like now.
All right. So we create two lots just because the road naturally bisects the property.
Exactly right.
All right. And we're still talking about doing some kind of affordable housing and transit component?
Yes. The balance of that I haven't heard yet. They're not telling me for a little while yet till this gets done. But, yeah, the main focus is delivering housing, and Anne Laurent and Rhoda Stoffer are pushing hard to get housing on that site. We have some other models about how the transit's all going to work down there.
All right. And, again, the city has committed to the purchase. It just hasn't closed the
sale. We haven't closed yet. That's correct.
Okay. And then the project known as April Claim, I believe. Alice Claim, right. That's scheduled to be on the city council's agenda Thursday. So what's happening here?
Okay, so Planning Commission approved the subdivision and forwarded it on to the city council and approved the conditional use permit for the steep wall. The conditional use permit was appealed to the city council, and the city council has not taken action on the subdivision. So it appears that there's an agreement between the property owner and the developer about where the new access road could be, so the walls are not necessary. So what we're asking the city council to do tomorrow night is remand the Alice Claim subdivision plat back to the Planning Commission to review the new road location, and then stay the appeal of the conditional use permit for the walls until we get the final action on the subdivision plat. And then the third component, which is kind of a property swap between the Ridge subdivision and this project, little tiny triangle piece, that one will just be continued because we don't expect that to shift. So it's some technical stuff that moves things around. Planning Commission gets another look at the project and gets to decide whether the solution proposed by the property owners is the right one for the neighborhood.
All right, this is what you were hoping for, though, wasn't it?
Well, I don't get much hope, but this is a solution that I think will work to accommodate both parties. It's significantly less than the wall that was proposed, so that's a benefit.
And the house sites still sit in the gully as opposed to up on the...
Yes, that's right. The house locations and sizes have not moved.
Yeah. And the number of lots we're talking about?
I think it's 11.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Well, a couple other things moving forward on the Planning Commission tomorrow night. We're going to take a look at the IHC, or the Hospital Final Development Agreement, which sets into final form all the remaining densities and the uses on those extra lots out there. And that's a very complicated technical document that kind of, like every other development agreement in town, kind of hardens everything for us. So Planner Whetstone's been working on that one. She's also working on the final design guidelines for Park City Heights. The mission there is to clear up the design guidelines so the affordable units can move a little bit smoother through the system. There were some discussions between our land management code and the original design guidelines that kind of complicated the process. So we're just trying to smooth that out, expedite the approval of the units as Ivory Homes brings them forward.
All right. And there's actually some construction going on out there again.
Oh, yeah. That's moving along. It's a little bit slower, of course, than what we'd like, but it will keep moving.
All right. Bruce, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It's Park City Planning Director Bruce Erickson. In Park City Institute presenting adventure environmentalist Jeff Corwin this Saturday night at the Eccles Center in Park City. He joins me now on the phone to tell us what to expect. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. So people may know you from your Saturday morning show, ABC Ocean Treks, with Jeff Corwin. Maybe your past visit to Park City or a number of other television shows you've been on. Give us a little bit about your background, Jeff, and kind of how you found yourself in show business.
Sure. Well, I'm a wildlife biologist by training, but for the past 20 years, I've hosted a number of series from Animal Planet to Discovery, and for the past 5 years, I've been on ABC exploring our planet's oceans and wildlife. And ultimately, my mission is to get out there and connect people to nature. And hopefully, by having a lot of fun on my TV programs, I'm in my own way inspiring the next generation of environmental stewards. We are very blessed in our country to have incredible natural resources. But if we want them to stick around, we all have to invest to protect them. And I want to get people, especially kids and their families, excited about science, excited about nature, and excited about conservation.
All right. So, I mean, your audience, you believe, is just primarily for children? Get them young, huh?
Actually, no. My Ocean Trek, as 70% of the audience is a woman between 25 and 55. So it's a family audience. And I look at my audience as my adventure companion. I imagine them with me in each episode of adventure and exploration.
All right. So tell me what's going to happen Saturday night. My understanding is that you're coming to Utah with some animals?
Yeah, it's a great program. This is one of my favorite programs to do. And basically, I take the experience that we have in each episode and I distill it into this really fun stage experience. These are animals from around the world. Most of them are rescued animals that no longer can live in the wild, and they get a second life as an ambassador to tell the story of nature and to tell the story of the challenges we face in protecting nature. But it's a very diverse group of animals, from the biggest to the tiniest to the spookiest to the furriest. It scales and feathers. It's a real kind of great mix of the biodiversity of our planet.
So can you be more specific in the type of animal?
I can't, because it's a surprise.
Okay.
I never give away what's going to be in state.
Okay.
But if you like big reptiles and incredible creatures that really have a wondrous story to tell, it's a very fun program. It's one of my favorite programs to do. And because it's very audience participatory, and you never know what's going to happen. To me, it's just a great adventure. And for me, I get a great joy out of connecting with the audience that has allowed me to do what I do in my job and my career.
So do the animals travel on the plane with you, or maybe you're driving? I don't know where you're coming from.
No, they come separately. They come from a organization in Massachusetts that I've worked with for many years. These animals have specific requirements, and they travel. Basically, they're on their way. I think they're leaving either tomorrow or the next day to make it to Utah in time for the program. But it's a very special group of critters, and it's a special group of people that help take care of those animals. These animals have often been rescued from situations where they were either illegal pets or in jeopardy, and you know, whether it's a giant alligator or a giant python, this experience allows me to kind of use them as a vehicle to tell their story and hopefully get people excited about why it's important that we all stand up and protect nature. But ultimately, it's about having fun. And through this fun experience, experience. Hopefully we build a better awareness about our planet.
Okay. Again, conservationist Jeff Corwin will be the guest on Saturday night at the Park City Eco Center. Tickets start at just $19. There are also, of course, $5 student tickets available, 435-655-3114. Jeff, hey, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.